You're listening to Stephen Maggi, host of one of America's top interview programs, The Stephen Maggi Show.
Hello, and thanks for joining me today. I'm Stephen Maggi, and remember, the countdown to Vegas Never Sleeps is just 2 weeks away. With us today, we're very honored to have the great actor Gary Graham. Now, you might not know immediately who Gary is by just the name, but when you see his picture, I remember him. This guy's been in a number of movies and TV shows and so forth, and we're going to go through some of those today. Really a great actor. Gary, thanks for being with us today. You know, when you were growing up in Long Beach, California, you really weren't thinking about acting as a little kid, were you?
No, I wasn't. I was going to be a doctor, you know, something that an adult does. Something, you know, a bona fide profession. I never thought about this silly acting thing. Are you kidding me? And then I got into college, and people say, hey, you're not bad at this. You should consider it. And I said, what? Come on, get out of here.
Well, was it something you did for fun? I mean, how did they know that you had this talent?
Yeah, that and to meet girls.
Yeah, well, that's always the reason to get into all this stuff. And you're a great-looking guy. It seemed like a natural fit, but still, it must have been a little challenging for them at first.
A little bit, to say the least. I was always the black sheep. I was always the guy who just went outside the box in everything. And I don't know. I was a second born, and I guess that's the curse of the second born. You know, the first born goes the family way, what's expected of him, and the second one says, I think I'm going to go a different way. So that was me.
You know, and it had to be something, Gary, where, you know, it's a very clear road of how you do become a doctor. You know, you're going to go to medical school and you do your residency and all that stuff. With acting, you know, you just never know. There's so many people that go to Hollywood and so forth and come up with nothing. Was it just something you thought, well, I'll do it for a little while and see what happens, and if it doesn't work out, I can always go back? Or
no.
Was it what you wanted to do, period?
Yeah, there was no plan B. I wasn't going to give it a little you know, I'll give it 3 years to be a star. No, it was never anything like that. It was just something that I discovered. I found that I felt comfortable, and I truly believed I could do it. Against all rational thought, I decided that I'd be good at it because I really didn't show that much proclivity toward it. I was very self-conscious. I was shy. I didn't like to get in front of crowds. I didn't like to be under the focus of attention. I was always the guy. I was a fairly decent comedy writer based on the fact that I would sit behind. I tended to sit behind the class clown and very quietly so that only he and I could hear. I would feed him lines, and he'd get great laughs out of my lines. And I became known for writing good little comedy one-liners, but I never had the huevos rancheros to actually utter them myself. So the class clown would get in trouble, but he'd also get all the girls, and with my material. So I thought, well, that's kind of maybe I have some future in comedy writing, though I never ventured into that. Comedy dying is easy, comedy is hard. I come to find I just. I probably will end up doing it just because I like to head toward things that scare the bejeebers out of me.
Yeah.
And acting certainly did, so I just knew I had to do it. And I also thought that with a complete irrational certainty that I would be one of those one out of a hundred who would actually work and support himself doing this crazy thing, acting. And I was right. I think maybe. An irrational certainty is what is required.
Well, yeah, I was just going to ask, Gary, is it something now, if you were talking to some kids who were thinking about doing it, it's like, if you're not really committed to this, maybe you should try something else? Because it sounds to me like this made a lot of sense. Hey, I'm going to do it. You kind of need that approach, I would think, to be successful.
Steve, if only I had someone as rational and logical as you at the time, telling me that. I have my dad, but who listens to their dad, right? Until they're older and wiser enough to listen to them. But I just had that weird feeling that I would work, that I would just work. I didn't put the goal in front of me to be a movie star or to win an Oscar or anything like that. I just said, no, I just want to work. I like the work, and I just want to work.
Well, you certainly do work. I mean, I was going through your, getting ready to talk with you, going through all the lists, and I mean, I knew a lot about, you know, I've seen some of the stuff you've done, but I didn't realize, I mean, believe me, there's something for everybody on this list of work that you have out there. And that's got to be kind of fun in a way, I would imagine, you know, to always have some new things in the works and go on different shows and so forth and just kind of, you know, see what's out there.
It's what keeps you going. I, just about the time I'm feeling... you know, it's been too long since I worked. I'm an utter failure. I'll never work again. Nobody will want to hire me. I'll maybe wander to the IMDb page and see all my credits stacked up, and I go, oh, I'm pretty damn impressive. that's quite a collection of work. I have worked a lot. I am somebody.
Well, you know, is it like that? Because I know some people that, like, even when they have a job, when they're out of work, they could have a beautiful background of different things, all perfectly, and they always think, oh my God, I'm never getting another job again. I mean, does it feel like that sometimes?
That is so typical of us. We could have had secured awards and starred in movies and television shows, but give us 3.5 weeks sitting idle, and we're just assured that the entire industry, the entire television and movie viewing public has completely forgotten us, and it's not true. But I used to think that I'm so neurotic. What am I doing? I should seek counseling ASAP. And then I would read biographies and stories about people like Brando or Henry Fonda. Henry Fonda was a typical one. He was absolutely certain at the last day of every job he ever did, he would never work again.
Oh, man.
they would come and tap him on the shoulder and say, hey, we're on to you now. Oh, yeah, I'm found out. Okay, you're right. I've just been getting away with it.
Well, we'll talk.
That's our neurosis.
Well, we'll talk a little politics at the end of this, but it seems like your background as a free market guy, it makes sense, because you'd have to be free market. If you're looking for something, any kind of guarantees or something in this business, it just doesn't exist.
No, it sure doesn't. We're independent contractors, and every negotiation is different. Every job is different. And when you're on a job, every day is different. So I realize that I'm comfortable in that madness. I finally found when I was studying for pre-med and all that, and getting ready for a career in medicine, I realized I just didn't feel like home. And when I got fully ensconced in an acting career, it just seemed to fit my sensibilities, my preferred lifestyle. I like a lot of time off. I like to go to work and work very intensely at various different things, and I like every day to be very, very different.
Well, yeah, and you talked about at the beginning, you did this for girls. Obviously, you know, women love doctors. There's no question about it, but I got to think you're in the business. I imagine it was good to you in that regard.
Well, I don't know. In Los Angeles, yeah. If I leave Los Angeles, I am somebody. But right here, I'm just another unemployed actor.
Oh, come on. Let's talk about some of the movies. You know, your first big role was in the movie Hardcore with George C. Scott. What was it like working with George C. Scott? Because everything I've ever seen him in, you just think, what a great actor this guy is.
Yeah, tremendous, tremendous talent, tremendous force of personality. And I don't think it's anything that I projected because I admired him so much. I think it's just something that born out. I think that's his go-to default mode is intensity, intimidation, and intensity. And
what was that like to work with? Because I know when he made, which is my favorite Christmas movie, you know, that and It's a Wonderful Life, but his version of A Christmas Carol, I mean, he was Scrooge, and yet I remember reading about that when he was filming it. They were saying, my God, he's the perfect role for him because this is kind of the toughest guy we've ever dealt with. Being that's your first role, Gary, was he hard to work with, or was he take you under his wing, or how did that go?
Yeah, I had done a bit of television prior to and film prior to working with him, but he was definitely the first A star working with, and he was so iconic by that time, and so far out of my league as I perceived it, that, I mean, so far that I didn't even get nervous working with him because I thought, well, I'm just a guy, and he doesn't know, and I'm here to do a job, and I'm going to make it as pleasant as I can and work as hard as I can and pick up and learn as much as I can. And I did all that, and I spoke to him, maybe not with the sort of reverence and respect and awe that everyone else around me was. I just talked to him like a regular guy. Didn't call him Mr. Scott. I just say, hey, George, you want to play a game of chess? He goes, yeah, come on. And he talked to me that way. He just, come on into my dressing room. Well, he gives me a beer, pours himself a vodka. We play chess. Then we go off and shoot a scene of violence where he's throwing me through a wall and tossing me down a stairway. It worked out. It just seemed really natural.
Yeah, yeah.
And mostly because I was so new to the business. I didn't know any better.
No, and it sounds like he enjoyed it too. I mean, what a great way to, yeah, like you said, it wasn't your first bit, but it was your first big role, you know?
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. I recall getting the role. I recall reading for the role, and with such, I walked into the reading with such abandon and ease that they cast me, and I thought, well, I'll just do that. It was all about attitude. I just carried that attitude of really not caring, even though of course I cared for the role and for doing a good job, but not caring what anybody thought of me.
In just a moment, more with actor Gary Graham, perhaps best known for his starring role as Detective Matthew Sykes on the television series Alien Nation. You are listening to America's Great Conversations on The Stephen Maggi Show.
Provocative guests, real interviews, surprising answers. This is The Stephen Maggi Show.
You'd never suspect that you could find natural beauty as part of a working landfill. You can. Today, waste management landfills provide more than 17,000 acres of protected land for wildlife habitats. Working closely with communities and the Wildlife Habitat Council, we can ensure there will be protected space for native animal and plant life to thrive. From everyday collection to environmental protection, think green. Think waste management.
I'm here with my good friend Logan Reed, who can change your life. That's right, she's a life coach, and I think you're going to like what she has to say. Logan, tell people what a life coach is.
So what I do is I partner with people to get clear on what their dreams are, what they really want in their life, and then what we do is we create the plan and the actions that actually have them create it and make it happen.
Yeah, and it's a lot of fun. I can tell you, I work with Logan myself, and it's just a wonderful experience. I think you got to try it. Logan, how can people get a hold of you to learn more?
They can give me a call at 360-529-1848, or they could write me at Logan@LoganReedCoaching.com.
And finally, your website?
My website is www.LoganReedCoaching.com.
You are listening to actor Gary Graham, star of stage, screen, and television. You got some great feature films there on your list. But the one I wanted to, yeah, there's too many to go through, but there's one I want to talk to you about because it was one of my favorite movies. It doesn't seem to get enough credit yet when people see it. You know, it's one of those films that'll be passed around, and that's Hollywood Nights, a fun movie, kind of like American Graffiti. Was that a lot of fun to do? Because it sure was a great film, and to me, it holds up pretty well over time.
It does. It's a fun romp. And yes, answer to your question, it was a great deal of fun doing. After I made it past the first day. The first day for me was the most frightening experience of my life, almost. My agent and I had double booked me. I was shooting an episode of The Incredible Hulk.
Wow.
And it was going to, backing up a little bit, we had our start date on Hollywood Nights pushed back 3 times. So you know that's always a whenever that happens, it's always a kick in the yarbles for the confidence of the movie. People start thinking about other things they'd rather be doing, and people can back out at that time, and you can lose your funding. So it's never a good sign when they push the start date of a production back any more than one time. And this is the third time. We just thought, and we had been getting together with Floyd Mutrix, the director writer, and the stars Bob Wall and Tony Danza, and we get together to rehearse, quote unquote rehearse. We ended up just drinking scotch and looking at pictures of old cars.
Wow!
And I thought these people aren't serious about doing a movie. So when they came to me with the third start date, I said, "Well, gee, I'm doing this. That would be the last 2 days of my week doing The Incredible Hulk. Should we book it? Well, okay, let's book it, because they assured me on the Hulk that I would be done in time to start on Hollywood Nights. Well, as things go, we Hulk got pushed back, and they started on time with the Hollywood Nights. So the perfect storm of my butt in a ringer happened, where I found myself at 4 o'clock, 4 o'clock the day I was supposed to start on Hollywood Nights in Van Nuys. I was in Santa Monica trying to get off of this set and get my scene shot so I could race across town from Santa Monica to Van Nuys in rush hour traffic, and just breaking every traffic law known to man, and I think I did it in 35 minutes, if you can believe that. And they're probably, I can still hear the sirens, they're probably still looking for me. But I made it there, just rattled and crazed, and my hair was kind of long, and I just left my car and ran to them and said, I'm sorry. And they said, that's all right, it's all right. And they put me in a chair and cut my hair and put makeup on and put me on the set. And we didn't have any script. Floyd Mutrix he plays things so close to the vest that we didn't even read a script. So they gave me my sides and put me in position while I'm still apologizing, right?
Yeah.
And the camera's rolling. William Franker, he's got this dolly. I see him coming around he did this long dolly move coming around the corner, and I see the camera crew coming, and I'm still looking at my lines, trying to get them down, and I see the camera coming in. I put the sides down, and then we played the scene. It was the scene where they give me the yellow car.
Yeah.
Before I go to Vietnam. So that scene all played out with me just unnerved, crazed. 45 minutes before that, I've been on the freeway, and ironically, that was one of the best scenes in the movie.
Isn't that something? You know, sometimes I guess it just kind of works out that way, because you hear something like that, you know, and as an actor, you're always memorizing lines, you're used to process. It's a little unnerving, I would imagine, when all of a sudden that process is gone. I mean, it's not a place you want to improvise, not when the film's rolling.
Right. Well, we threw it together, and sometimes it helped.
When we return, we will continue our conversation with Gary Graham, who has played more than 38 television roles and has been in more than 40 movies. This is The Stephen Maggi Show.
Thought-provoking questions and fascinating conversations. This is The Stephen Maggi Show.
Well, we are just 2 weeks away. October 1st, that will be the very first opening show of Vegas Never Sleeps, and I'm going to be doing everything to bring Las Vegas to you. Well, that includes the stars, the food, all the special events that happen there, the history of that incredible city, and much more of this internationally known entertainment capital. And if you visited it, you get it. But if you haven't, you're going to learn about it.
Forgotten Heroes, the independent film that Hollywood refused to distribute.
They were asked to risk their lives in order to save their enemy.
The producers of Forgotten Heroes are donating 25% of all sales to the American Veterans Disabled for Life Memorial Fund.
We need someone to go in there and bring him out.
From first-time director Jack Marino, the home run for America's Vietnam veteran.
They are Forgotten Heroes.
Buy the DVD now at ForgottenHeroesTheMovie.com. That's ForgottenHeroesTheMovie.com.
Waste management has earth-friendly plans that fit the biggest corporations and recycling programs to help smaller companies get started. We're there for you every night and on the job with you every day. When you put waste management to work, you get an environmental partner and big ideas for every size business. From everyday collection to environmental protection, think green. Think waste management. To learn more, visit WM.com.
You are listening to multi-talented actor and songwriter Gary Graham. And Gary and I were just discussing his long career in film.
Not only was the big screen friendly to you, but the small screen. I was looking at this thing with the 80s and just some of the shows you have been on. I mean, it literally defines the 80s, starting, you know, with The Dukes of Hazzard. You were on Hunter, you know, as a guest star. Moonlighting with Bruce Willis, his star. Remington Steele. You know, at that time when you do that kind of thing, are you afraid of becoming, you know, this character actor? You're never going to get your own shot at things? Or is it something like, no, I'm working, this is great, and you know, people, like I say, they know you. They see your face, they go, I know him. And they might go, I don't remember exactly where, but I know that guy.
Right. It is the latter, definitely. I'm never worried about getting typecast or anything like that. I figured, I should have such worries, you know. Appearing in an iconic role that everybody and their mother remember. I should have such bad luck. No, I was just always happy to work. Whenever I was on a set, I'm the happiest, and I'm always I'm looking forward to the next role. I tell people happiness, heaven for an actor, is having just come off a shoot that you feel good about. It's in the can. You're on the set of your next project, and after that you've got a movie lined up
it's glamorous, you know. I mean, there's no question about it. For every guy like you that's been successful, there are literally thousands of people that would love to have just a piece of that. But what they don't get, though, Gary, it sounds like, you know, is there is no sense of security, number one. And, you know, you're constantly battling. I mean, as soon as you get done with something, like you were saying about Fonda before, you don't know what's coming next. And and I guess it's something, you know, how do you network in that world? I mean, is it the idea, the more you work like that, the more you get to know these different, you know, the directors, producers, and then they think of you when things pop up? Or how do you keep them, you know, your name out there?
Absolutely right. Yeah, Steve, you're really good at this. These are great questions, by the way.
Thank you.
There's 100,000 ways, different ways to get into the business, and there's 500,000 different ways to keep going in the business. And it's just I've never really sweated it too much because I've managed my money nicely, so that it sustains me. So I don't allow myself anymore. I did, of course, in the early years, but I don't allow myself anymore to get to a point of desperation of, man, I need this job just to keep the lights on. I've gone past that point where I have a bit of stability, and yet I'm so eager and hungry to work because there's so many fine, wonderful artists and stories and projects out there that I want to be a part of. So I keep my ear to the track, and when things come up, I pursue them. And I don't do. I'm not really an avid networker per se, because I get caught in the act of networking, and I abhor that. I don't want to approach a conversation with an ulterior motive. But I like people, so I like to meet people and just talk about their stuff and just open, you know, sort of put myself out there. Just this last weekend, I was talking with an attorney who represents a very, very famous actor turned director, and he's got a project coming up, and he had put a bug in their ear about me, and because we're old friends, and I just wanted to thank him for that, and that conversation may lead to a curiosity next week where that prompts a phone call and another bug, and now people are talking about you, and who knows how it all works together, but maybe you end up with a role, maybe you don't, or maybe they think of you for a future thing. There's so many different ways it works, but I just like to think positive and to look forward with optimism.
Well, yeah, you definitely come across as a positive thinker and a really open-minded guy, because not only have you done movies and TV, but I mean, I was just going through some of this. You were part of King of the Hill, you know, where you had to do a voice and stuff. You had fun with that. You've written a book, which I think is interesting, and some protest songs. I love this, and I want to talk a little about this with you, because, you know, not only have you done all this work, but you've done it as a guy that's not afraid to say, hey, you know what, I am not going to be a rubber stamp leftist, which a lot of Hollywood is, and we hear about that, and there's no question there is some of that out there in Hollywood where, you know, it's tougher, yet you've proven that you can hold to your beliefs and still get work, which has to be encouraging, because you don't want to have to sell out or just be quiet to work.
Right. Yeah, I realized early on that I wasn't really interested in being one of the cool kids. The cool kids are all lefties. They all go on and do the standard lefty line, the progressive line, and make the little the PSAs pushing a leftist agenda. And it's just not in my heart. I just don't go that way. And I was, you know, the unspoken rule in Hollywood is you're a lefty, or you shut up about it.
Right.
And I always resented that. I say, hey, you know, they can shoot their mouth off about their guy or their cause. I'm going to do it too. And has it cost me work? Probably. I don't know. I prefer to not think so. Because I prefer to think that the rest of the town is as open minded as I am. In which case I would. I don't mind working with leftists. I don't mind working with Democrats, and they shouldn't mind working with conservatives. You know, Sean. Yeah. I met Sean Penn a couple of months ago. Hell of a nice guy. We just had a great conversation, and no, we didn't get into politics.
Right.
But I wish we. I would love to talk politics with him sometime. But he and I have a very different viewpoint on the world and on what system of government works best for the betterment of all mankind, and what should and should not be the responsibility of the government.
Well, why not? You know, why not have those conversations? That's encouraging to hear about Sean Penn, because a lot of people on the right can't stand him and so forth, what have you. But my attitude, and it sounds like this is where you're coming from, my attitude is, hey, you know what? This just shouldn't be a part of the work. It should be something we talk about off camera, what
sure.
have you. But what the heck? I mean, you have friends from all walks of life.
Sure. And like I have conversations with my Democrat friends. We've found to love each other and stay in our lives, and even bring up politics, and it can be a lively, spirited, but never nasty debate.
Yeah, absolutely. And those can be kind of fun. It's a shame we've gotten to that point. That's one of the things that kind of bothers me about what's happened to politics now. It's like, you know, you got to pick a side, and you know, you got a group of people that hate you and a group of people that love you, and it shouldn't be that way.
It shouldn't. Name calling is the last stand of the weak argument. I say if you have a strong argument, use your gray matter, use that watermelon on your shoulders, and state your case. And win it through good-hearted humor and brotherhood and love for all mankind. You can do it.
Well, talk about that those five new protest songs. I think that's really interesting. And the good part of that is, by the way, regardless of how you feel, the proceeds go to benefiting the Wounded Warrior Project, which is, you know, a wonderful organization, regardless of how you feel on the political spectrum. But how did you come up with those songs, and did you get much response to it?
We did a lot. The project was born out of one of those meetings that you mentioned. The FOA people are Friends of Abe, conservatives in Hollywood, getting together and, you know, sharing a beer. And I met a guy who was a sound recording editor in Hollywood, in the film industry. And he was also a musician. And we got to talk, and we said, well, you want to get together sometime and jam? He goes, yeah, let's do it. Come by my studio.
When we return, you'll hear more from Gary Graham, who Star Trek fans know him best from Star Trek Enterprise as the recurring character Ambassador Sovol, a Vulcan ambassador to Earth. You're listening to The Stephen Maggi Show.
You're listening to Stephen Maggi, host of one of America's top interview programs, The Stephen Maggi Show.
This year, more than 172,000 people will be told they have lung cancer. 60% will wonder why, as they never smoked or quit smoking years ago. Lung cancer will kill 163,000 people this year, more people than breast, prostate, colon, liver, and kidney cancers combined, making it by far America's number one cancer killer. But there is hope. New treatments are available, and more are on the way. The Lung Cancer Alliance is working to focus attention and research on lung cancer to develop early detection tools and more treatment options. Lung Cancer Alliance is leading the charge as the only organization solely dedicated to providing support, resources, and a voice for people touched by lung cancer and those at risk for the disease. Join us in the fight against lung cancer. The time has come. No more excuses. No more lung cancer. To learn more, visit lungcanceralliance.org or call 1-800-298-2436.
What would you do if you weren't afraid? What would you do if you knew that you couldn't fail? My name is Logan Reed, and I'm a PCC credentialed life coach, working with people every day who want to know the answers to these questions for themselves and then make it happen. I work with people who are ready to take charge of their life, to leave their unsatisfying job and launch a new career, have the romantic relationship of their dreams, prepare for retirement, experience more joy. I partner with clients to support them in getting clear on what they truly want in life, creating the plan to get there, and taking the action to make it all come to life. If you would like to explore how working together can make your dream life a reality, I invite you to give me a call at 360-529-1848 or write me at logan@loganreedcoaching.com. Want to learn more about who I am and what coaching is? Check out my website at www.loganreedcoaching.com. I look forward to meeting you.
You are listening to actor Gary Graham, who's played a plethora of roles since 1980. Gary and I are just discussing his latest efforts, writing a song together with a friend he met in a political Hollywood group.
Some time goes on. Finally, I say, you know, it's been too long. I gotta grab my guitar and go and jam with this guy. So I did. We got together, and I'm tuning up, and he says, well, you want to jam, or you want to record something? I mean, we hadn't even done a 12-bar blues or anything. And he says, you want to record something? I go, well, I suppose we could write something and record it. Let's do it. And so we started. He says, well, what's on your mind? And it was right around the time that Scott Wilson was taking on the unions, and they were flooding in the state capitol with their prefab signs. And
yeah.
And I was just very much appalled at the way they were just, you know, squatting in the capitol, and it just seemed like the same old, you know, ISEU or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And I just thought, well, God bless Scott Walker for sticking to his guns and just, just saying, no, I don't think we should be forced into that. And so I started talking, and Lyle Engel is my writing partner. He starts writing, and I get done with my little tirade, and he had two verses written. And we tweaked that a little bit. And then I came up with a chorus and a bridge. And then he wrote the third verse. And within 2 hours, we had our first song, Bought and Paid.
Wow.
And we recorded it the next day.
That is so much fun. You know, I love guys like that can write something. Isn't that amazing? You throw a few ideas out and here's somebody, boom, think I have something. It's incredible.
I'm amazed by it, too. I need to get back together with him because there's something, there's this synchronicity that happens when the two of us get together that I've never encountered before or since.
And it's a lot. Wow, it's a lot of fun. Get other creativity going. Well, Gary, what's up next for you? What you know, you've always got things going. What's next in the hopper for you?
Yeah, I just came back from Atlanta through the month of July and August. Did a feature movie out there that's set around the Georgia red clay dirt track racing world, and it's just a sweet, sweet little story. Very exciting and very heart-wrenching. That was a great experience. It's called Champion, and I'm looking forward to that coming out. I would be looking for that maybe at the beginning, maybe late spring, beginning of summer of next year.
Okay, we'll look for that.
Champion, and we're putting together our film, our Star Trek spinoff film called Axanar. Hope to be filming that in January. We've done it. It's a fan-driven thing.
Nice.
Axanar, A-X-A-N-A-R.
Okay.
Got a big website and all that. And
you know, that's one last question I got to ask you. Do you like now that there's just so many different avenues to go? I mean, at one time there was and you certainly managed to navigate those quite well. You know, there were the studios for movies. There were, four big networks. Now you got all sorts of cable channels. You've got things like Netflix and stuff. You can do things on YouTube. Is that kind of fun where if you want to do something maybe that's not going to be a mass media hit but definitely has a life that you've got a place to show it?
Oh, it's so much fun. It is so much fun. It's such a wonderful time to be in this business. I know a lot of people who are threatened by it. That's not the way we used to do it, and what happened to the movies of the week, and all this reality TV and all that. I say, calm down. It's all wonderful. With the number of cable channels that have just blown up, they're all over the place, there are more outlets for your movies or your reality show or your fix up the house and sell
right.
it show, whatever it is. And it's just with digital photography, the advent of the digital camera and all that, it's just been become more and more economical to do it yourself. It's very, very exciting. And also the I'm just blown away by the new revolution in ways of funding your project. The fan-driven, the Indiegogo and the Kickstarter and all that. And just, as we speak, they're coming up with new and more innovative ways to very quickly, instantly fund your project, whatever it is. If it's a fly to Mars, I'll bet an Indiegogo project is going right now to do a independently financed commercial venture off to Mars.
Well, what seems great about it is you can have some idea that nobody's thought of. Maybe you want to do a biography of somebody that we really don't know much about. And you think about some of the great things that have come up. I mean, like Mad Men, that wouldn't have been in your typical network TV show. And yet with the fact that there's so many different places, it got a play. Matt Weiner got a, was able to put it out there. And now we're really in what seems to me like the really golden age of some great drama out there.
Absolutely. I almost each week I discover two or three wonderful, wonderful cable series. Most recently I discovered, because one of the little girls who was in this this movie Champion that I just came off of, she's working in this thing called Rectify that I hadn't even heard of. I maybe had heard of it in passing, but her mother, this little girl's mother, was telling me all about it. And I thought, well, that's intriguing. So when I got back, I I did a binge watch on Netflix and got all caught up with Rectify, and it's my new passion, my new favorite addiction is watching Rectify. It's just fantastic. All shot in Georgia. Gorgeous, gorgeous stories. Beautiful scenery that we're filming in as well. And just brilliant, brilliant acting. It's just wonderful. Rectify.
Well, you know, I'm glad you gave us that tip because, ironically, just yesterday, I got to tell you, I was looking at, a Mad Men thing, and they were saying, hey, if you like this show, you might like, and one was Rectify. There was like three shows. I'm glad. I'm going to check that out, too.
Oh, yeah. See it from the very beginning. It kind of has a slow pace, but it sort of hypnotizes you.
Yeah.
And before you know it, you have to watch another episode.
Well, that's what's great about this binge watching thing. I mean, I did that with The Wire. I had heard about The Wire. You start watching that, and I ended up, having some really good nights of like four or five of these in a row because you can't stop.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Gary, we all want to follow you. I think people want to keep an eye on what you're doing and so forth. I know you've got a web page of your own. How can we follow you?
You can follow me on Facebook. That's usually the quickest. I have a GaryGraham.com page, but I think it's going through some renovation. I would say find me on Facebook. Find me and follow me on Facebook. Maybe I get a few slots for friends. I don't know, but I pretty much publicize everything that's going on with my career and my world on Facebook.
Well, we will do that. Thanks so much for being with us. Really enjoyed chatting with you, Gary.
Oh, you're so very welcome.
Well, that's it for today's show. Remember to check out our website, Steve and Maggie Show, and get ready for Vegas Never Sleeps. This is the Steve and Maggie Show.
Visit us at Steven with a V, MAGGI show.com. This is the Steve and Maggie Show.